Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What is good, everyone? Welcome to KGW's 3-on-3 Blazers. My name is Orlando Sanchez. We're switching it up today. I've got people sitting in different spots.
Yeah, you can't say Jared Calley to my right, Nate Hansen to my left, Max Barr on the one. It's all switched
flow,
up.
The flow is going to be different for this show, guys. Jared Calley is taking over for Max Barr, who's got the day off. We miss you, Max. Jared, hold it down for us on the ones and twos. And Nate Hansen, he is on my right today.
I am. Switching it up on you, man.
We do miss Max, that is for sure. That means, unfortunately, no Rip It today. Sorry, everyone.
I don't know if we should have told the listeners that right here.
Now they turn it off now.
Please don't turn off the podcast. We still got a good one in store, even without Rip It. Max is getting an early start to his Thanksgiving break, which is totally okay.
Oh, yeah, man. If the numbers drop, we will refer to Max as the ratings king.
Yes, absolutely.
So, happy Thanksgiving to everyone who's joining us. And this has been it's been a while since the Blazers have been home.
Yeah,
it's been a couple of weeks.
True.
They come home licking their wounds after what was a pretty brutal stretch of basketball for the Portland Trail Blazers overall, but it did end on a high note.
Yes.
What did you guys think of the way Carmelo Anthony and the Blazers were able to finally win a game on the road?
I mean, it was weird in the sense that everything after the San Antonio game was so bad on that road trip that going into the Bulls game, you're thinking no matter what happens tonight, there's no way as a Blazers fan or as a player or someone with the Blazers organization, you can feel good about this team when they come back to play Oklahoma City and Portland. And sure enough, they found a way to make us feel good at the end of the road trip somehow. I know I texted you after the game on Monday and said that was the most fun I've had watching a Blazers game since the very first night of the season when they played that thriller against Denver.
Yeah, man.
Like, it was entertaining basketball. It was fun to watch. Obviously, winning helps a ton, but it was just, they looked in a groove. They looked in a flow. They looked like this is the team that had been playing together for 15 games already this year. And it was just, we're so not used to seeing that this year that took me by quite a surprise, and it was a pleasant surprise at that.
It was fun to see them having fun. Yeah, as well, and seeing Damian Lillard out there cheer for Carmelo when he hit his big shot and had a dunk, and seeing the guys all rally together, they're hugging each other. Mm-hmm. That was something that I felt wasn't as visible
in recent, and
plain and simple, I mean, they've got to win for them to be having that type of fun.
But I wonder if there wasn't a discussion privately about that type of stuff, because it was noticeable early on in the first quarter, even when they weren't winning. Because remember, they trailed by one at the end of the first quarter. So it wasn't like they were dominating immediately, but you could see the extra energy, the extra cheering from the bench, the extra energy just and intensity on the floor from the guys playing. It was noticeable right off the bat against the Bulls. So I wonder if privately there were some discussions had after the Cleveland loss, which may have been their most embarrassing of the year, which is a growing list of embarrassing losses this year. But they may have had a meeting after that, and they certainly looked like a different team against the Bulls.
The tricky part for me is not allowing myself to get too swayed by one game.
Yeah. Against a pitiful team.
Right.
Against a very, very bad Bulls team. And I think that you'll see in today's podcast that I am failing at that effort.
All right. Yes, that's what I like. I like enthusiastic, optimistic Jared back in the house, baby.
Just think if we were having this conversation after the Cleveland game.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
This podcast would have a completely different tone. And while Jared may be super optimistic, I'm also going to tease, I think we're going to have a nice little balance here between me and Jared. I yet to know where you fall in the spectrum. We'll find out.
Yeah, because I definitely was feeling some kind of way after the Cleveland game. I mean, that was brutal. I mean, I was even kind of opening up on Sports Sunday, which I rarely do, is dive into the commentary realm. But with John out, that was a brutal game to watch. So it's going to be a lot of fun to kind of talk about this roller coaster even over the last couple of games. But now the Portland Trailblazers get back home. We finally get a chance to see Carmelo Anthony in person. I'm really excited to see what the energy will be like at the Moda Center.
Yep.
And it's just been a couple of weeks since we've had basketball here in Portland. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Make sure and join the conversation. You can hit us up on Twitter. You can hit us up on our new email address that we have. Jared, what's our email address?
You can find us at 3on3blazers@gmail.com.
We had a ton of comments over the past few weeks since we've been asking, and it's always made us better, I feel like, the conversation.
Yes.
It's added a new dynamic to the pod as well.
The great thing about the fan comments and fan questions is that you guys ask things that we may be afraid to jump into on this podcast without being given a nudge towards it. And so no matter your take, definitely feel free to send them to us because we're not afraid to talk about them.
So let's get into it. You guys know how this goes. We have three questions. We've got three answers because, well, there's three of us. So question number one, Carmelo Anthony played his best game in more than a year against the Bulls. Can this kind of production or close to it be expected going forward?
Go, Jared. Start the optimism train. Here we go.
All right. Before I get into my optimistic take, 25-8, that's not going to
That's not sustainable,
to happen. I mean, yeah, but I don't know what the parameters are and what we're deciding about. You know, can this kind of production, what kind of production are we talking about? I think if we're expecting him to average 25-8 going forward, no, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But I do think he can absolutely maintain or even increase his current production level. If you just look at the four games he's played with the Blazers, he's averaging 16 points, 5 boards, 2 assists, a steal, and he's shooting inefficiently from the field, 39%, but he's shooting efficiently from three because he's shooting 39% from three. I think that he can kind of maintain those stats or something close to it. I just want to talk. I think that Carmelo Anthony, for me, is playing much better than I expected him to. And I really think it starts, the first thing that has really impressed me is it's so evident how hard he worked while he was away from the NBA in the past year. And that he didn't have to do that. He could have felt sorry for himself, been angry that, you know, he was done wrong by the Houston Rockets. Whatever he had done, it would have been understandable.
Yeah.
But he came back ready to play.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so impressive and shows a lot about his character.
Yeah.
And so that's been impressive. And because he came back ready to play, it's allowed him to play a lot of minutes.
Yes.
He's averaging almost 30 minutes per game with the Blazers. Mm. And he looks like he can play more if he needs to. And that's so important for this roster because they need someone who can chew up all those minutes at power forward because they're so thin at that position. So having him come in and be able to play 30 minutes a game and also produce in those 30 minutes, it's huge. It's such a big, just a boon for this team.
Yep.
And I think that with Carmelo, he's in such a perfect situation for him. The situation in Portland is ideal because he's starting. He knows he's going to start. There's no question about that. He's playing power forward, which is his ideal position right now. And he's been given the autonomy to play to his strengths. You know, he's not being shoehorned into a role that does not fit him like he was, especially in Houston and also in Oklahoma City, where they're saying, Carmelo, just go stand in the corner and wait for the ball to come to you and shoot, catch and shoot threes. That was basically what they said they wanted him to do in both of those stops. And that doesn't play to his strengths. In Portland, you're seeing he is taking a lot of catch and shoot threes. He's open on those threes. He's taking them. And other than the bad game he had against Cleveland, he's been making them. But he's also operating in the post. He's getting those ISO opportunities. You're seeing the iconic Carmelo jab step. I mean, the Blazers are letting Melo be Melo. And so far, it's working out great for them. And so I think that 25-8, no. But what he's doing and what you've seen in the first four games, absolutely yes.
Okay, we're going to be a little bit closer on the slot line. I was hoping Jared was going to push.
So you thought I was going to be be an all-star.
No, but no. Let's give you a quick over-under here in terms of points per game. 18 points per game.
I think he could hit that, yeah.
Okay.
I think he can average between 15 and 20.
Okay, that's fair. So I wouldn't go that high with Carmelo. So the immediate answer to the question is, can we expect this going forward? To me, it's no. And I'm not doing this just to rain on Melo fever. He's been, especially again in the Chicago game, he won them that game against the Bulls. I just don't think it's realistic to expect that he can continue to play at a level even similar to the Chicago game consistently night in and night out. Now, with that said, I don't think his performance against the Bulls will be an isolated performance. I think we're going to see him have a couple more games like that where maybe he breaks the 30-point barrier. Yeah. I think he's going to get hot some games, and he's an aggressive scorer, and he knows when he's hot, and Dame and CJ will know when he's hot, and they'll get him the ball so he can go get some buckets. But I can't ignore the previous three games. And yes, a lot of it was the 0-for-8 against Cleveland in terms of the outside shooting and the shooting percentage. But in those first three games, he was averaging 13 points per game, shot 34% from the field, 31% from three. His net rating was nearly minus 10.
Yeah.
And so to me, I can't just ignore that and discount it completely just because of one really good game he had against a bad team in the Bulls. And so, but do I expect him to be that bad moving forward consistently? No. I think he's kind of going to be right in between what we saw against the Bulls and what we saw when he first joined the Blazers, was thrust into a roster with teammates he had never even met before until hours before the game against the Pelicans. I think he's going to be right in between there. I think it's realistic to expect he can average 13 to 15 points per game and shoot 40% from the field. That's what he averaged at Oklahoma City and Houston. I think that's a reasonable expectation for him moving forward. And although that production may not be as high as Jared thinks he could reach, that is still a major step up from what they're getting at the power forward position before bringing on Melo to this train.
So I have a follow-up question for you. I mean, I think he could average between 15 and 20.
Yeah.
I think 15 is more realistic for me. Do you think I think I said, yeah, I could see him averaging 18. Do you think it's a possibility?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't see him averaging 18 points per game. And also just Damian Lillard, like Carmelo Anthony's usage has been extremely high through these first four games. Even the Chicago game, it was much higher than CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard's. At some point, that's going to change, and Dame's going to have nights where he gets his, and CJ's going to have nights where he gets his. Rodney Hood will get hot for a night. Anthony Simons will come off the bench and drop 15 to 20. So to me, I don't think 18-point-a-game average is sustainable. Could you do it, every 3 out of 5 games? Yeah.
Yeah.
But not on a per-night basis.
Yeah, I don't think it's realistic just based on the amount of guys that need touches.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a concerted effort to make sure that Melo gets involved sooner rather than later, just to get him used to playing with these guys. So, yeah, I would lead towards the under on that. But, man, if you're getting a guy that comes off the streets that you picked up off the waiver and he is your starting four and he's putting up 15 points a night, let's say.
That would have been higher than any of our expectations when they signed him a week and a half ago.
100%.
Yeah.
And so just based on that through the first four games, this has been a win for the Blazers. Even if this honeymoon phase fizzles out and doesn't turn out to be much, I mean, they got a starting power forward for a month or so.
Yeah.
But let's see where this thing goes. The one thing that I did learn over the past few games is that Melo still has something left in the tank.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Like, this guy belongs in the league.
And he's motivated to prove something, too, to all those teams who refuse to sign him
for
a year.
Right, and there's so many, stories or different guys that people push for that you want to see come back or may have something left. Well, this is the side of things that it actually works.
Yeah.
And to your point, he's playing big minutes and could play more. So I really like that. It's been a great fit to your point, Jared, about just how the dynamic with the way the Blazers want to do things. And he's like the nice piece that fits right into that offensively.
Yeah.
There's still a lot of questions on how he's going to impact this team when the shot isn't falling.
Yeah.
We may have
seen it against Cleveland.
Yeah. And we all know what happened in that Cleveland game.
Exactly.
It wasn't a good story. So that was the big thing that I took away from this, was that, okay, Melo still has some juice, or some bop, as he would say. And that was good to see. And that's something that the Portland Trailblazers can benefit on right now when they need someone desperately at that position. And he's not only come in, but he's filled a starting role with starting minutes. So it's going to be fun to watch this as it goes beyond this. But as of right now, this has been a win for the Blazers. I don't think that it's something that can be sustained to your guys's, you know, that you guys said. Asking for 25-8, I think massive ask for somebody who is in the twilight years of his career.
Do you think he can sustain his overall production that you've seen over these four games, though? Where you've got, like Nate said, and he's totally right, I think Melo has had two below-average games and two good games. His game against the Bucks was, he played really well.
Yes, he did. I think you're going to get a lot of that, you know, and when you're looking at the big picture, you're going to take it right down the middle and say, all right, you know what, 12-4 or 12-5 from this guy? I mean, that's pretty good offensively.
While the bad games, we know it can hurt them. In the case of the Cleveland game, we saw firsthand how that can impact the Blazers. At the same time, the fact that he can have these good games in terms of just a defense and how the opponents defend the Blazers has a major impact, that he can have these good games and has shown already that he can knock down shots and be aggressive as a scorer to try to take some of that pressure off Dame and CJ for their games moving forward.
Did you guys notice how much that opened things up for them?
Oh, 100%.
Like the amount of layups that Dame and CJ were getting when they wanted
it. It wasn't just Melo. Rodney Hood has been great with three balls so far this year, and he hit a couple early against Chicago as well, so that established, well, okay, now both Melo and Rod, it's kind of what the dream Blazer scenario has been with Dame and CJ. You had two guys on the outside who can shoot and score on their own. You had your big man in the middle who can finish up close to the rim. And then you let Dame and CJ control the rest of the offense.
Like, part of me, that's kind of why I was thinking Dame was so excited.
No kidding.
It was like relief. Like, thank you.
It was everything.
Like, I don't have to do everything.
Think of how many nights he dreamed of having a five-man lineup out there like that and have it operate the way it did against the Bulls. I think that's one of the reasons he was probably so excited. We saw him waving, you know, for Carmelo after his dunk, you know.
He was probably the best hype man out there.
Exactly. And also, we've talked all these things. We've talked on the court. I think Melo has brought some juice to this team off the court, just with his presence being on the team. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer, one of the best scorers in NBA history. And you have a mix of guys who competed against him even when he was really good, and a group of guys who've grown up idolizing him on the roster. And I think it brought a new juice to this team who really needed it.
I agree.
Question number two. The Blazers have completed a brutal 18-game stretch that included 13 road games and maybe the most challenging of the season. The Blazers finished 6-12, well below expectations. So guys, despite the record, some are hopeful that Portland can turn this season around. Are you guys one of those believers? Why or why not?
Okay, I'll take the start on this one, because we know a couple weeks ago I said I'm going to jump ship again, because that's how I roll. I love jumping ship.
Oh, it's my favorite.
It's my flip-flopping. It's my favorite thing to do on this podcast. But I'm not going to do it again this week.
I wanted to hear it, man.
I'm not going to do it quite yet. I'm not jumping back on that Blazers bandwagon.
You need more than one win against a bad team.
I need more than that. But I will say this. I can see a blueprint now for how this team could find success moving forward, which I didn't see before the Bulls game. Because that Bulls game, it looked like the Blazers have now finally, after 18 games, solidified a rotation. Mm. And the starting five we know of Lillard, McCollum, Hood, Anthony, Whiteside. As long as those guys stay healthy, that's their starting five. We saw Scalabissiere come off the bench. Nasir Lill, Anthony Simons, Kent Bazemore. What I liked about that nine-man rotation is you could identify what each player's role was going to be when they were supposed to be out there on the floor, including the bench players. Mm-hmm. Kent Bazemore's role is going to be to play great defense on the perimeter and be asked to hit a couple of shots occasionally. Anthony Simons' job is going to be come in and score. Nasir Little's job is going to be to do those little things Al-Farouq Aminu did, give energy, get rebounds. And Scalabissiere, he's going to have to carry a big load, you know, being really the only front court guy off the bench. But he excelled in that role against Chicago. And
he's
still
doing a pretty good job,
and it's an identified role for him to fill. And then on the starting lineup, you've got Dame and CJ, you got two shooters, and you got Whiteside. So I like that. It looks like they finally have a rotation where guys know what they're supposed to do, and maybe they're supposed to get some cohesion.
You know?
where are we going? Where are you laughing at?
Nate, you sound like a believer to me.
You didn't let me get to the butt. I was just about to say butt.
I'm not jumping ship. I'm still jumping ship. But, hey, these Blazers are amazing.
Not going that far yet, my friend.
I thought they were 12-6 for a minute there.
You got to let me finish. Hey, the Bulls game did a number on all of us, man. We're all still trying to calculate how we're supposed to be. Talk to me again in 5 hours. If they lose right. to Oklahoma City, we'll have a completely different conversation. You didn't let me get to the butt,
all right.
I was about to get to.
Here's a punchline.
But their margin for error is still super slim.
Yeah.
Like, think of everything that went right in that Bulls game. Whiteside was engaged. He was impactful both offensively and defensively. We've seen already this year, you're not going to get that night in and night out, and they need that from him. Carmelo Anthony must be able to knock down outside shots and take advantage of his ISO opportunities like he did against the Bulls. But we saw in Cleveland when that didn't work out and the Blazers suffered. Scalabissiere, as I said, he's going to have to shoulder a ton of the front court duty off the bench. Simons must score consistently off the bench to give him that punch off the bench. Like, there's a lot of things that have to go right for Portland in order to sustain success long-term this season. Not to mention, they have to stay healthy.
Yes.
If one of these nine guys I've talked about gets hurt, that rotation is suddenly out of whack, and you're trying to find minutes for Mario Hezonja and Gary Trent, and the Blazers can't have that moving forward. The other thing working in the Blazers' favor is their next 18 games. While the first 18 were tough, the next 18 are favorable. 12 of them are at home, and 12 of them are against teams 500 or below. So maybe they can start making up some ground. That 18-game stretch would take them to January 5th, and we'll see where they are 36 games into the season at that point. The reason I'm not jumping ship yet, despite all those good things I said, is I don't think everything I talked about can happen consistently for Portland, and they need it to happen for them to win games.
You know how people say Christmas is like the day when you figure out where they're at? Yeah. I like that you brought up January 5th. I think that January 5th is the day that we know who the Portland Trail Blazers are and what the rest of the season could look like for them.
Yeah, I agree. So I am still a believer.
Of course.
Yes.
Shocking.
It's not a surprise.
I don't think – did you ever stop becoming a believer at any point? Just curious.
A little bit after the Cleveland game.
Okay.
I think if they had followed up that Cleveland loss with the loss to the Bulls, I would have jumped ship.
Oh, we all would be. Yeah. If they had lost to the Bulls, we would
– That would have been it.
Yeah. You would have heard none of the good things I talked about for 3 minutes.
I think that the thing that was interesting for me with the Bulls game is that was the first time we'd seen this iteration of the Blazers healthy and all playing together. I mean, they've had so many injuries, and it's not just been Zach Collins, and obviously they've been without Nurkic. It's been all these other little injuries that have, like you said, Nate, they've forced guys who should not be playing into prominent roles.
Yes.
And that's, I think, been the biggest reason they've been so bad. And let's not sugarcoat it. They've been really, really bad.
Yes.
This has been a very bad basketball team up to this point. But they showed something in that Bulls game. And again, it's one game, and it was a bad opponent. But they did show something. They showed a blueprint, like you said. They're back home now. You know, 12 of their next 18, 12 of their next 16 are at home. They look like they're as healthy as this roster can be right now at this point. Let's hope that continues. And Melo's presence has just injected some life into this team, into this locker room. They have to stay healthy. If they have more injuries and they have to put these guys who shouldn't be playing into the lineup, it's going to hurt them. But right now, they're only 3 games out of the 8th spot in the West.
I'm glad you brought this up because, yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, yes, they're 6-12, but they haven't dug themselves such a large hole that they can't climb out of it. You know, the bottom of the West is not that strong right now.
No.
And so that spot is there for the Blazers to push towards. If you look at this, like, let's consider an NFL team. Let's say there's an NFL team that is expected to be very good, and they get 20% of their way into the season, which is where we are right now with the Blazers. We're 20% way, you know, of the way through the season. That would be an NFL team starting 1-2. Yeah. A team that you expect to be good in the NFL, they start 1-2. You're not all of a sudden saying, okay, there's no chance they can make the playoffs.
Depends on the fan base you're talking about. But yes, sane fan bases would not jump to that conclusion.
And so I think that's where the Blazers are right now. I don't think we should discount their chances of pushing back, especially with the history this team has under Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum and Terry Stotts of sometimes getting off to a slow start and then making a big push in the second half of the season to make the playoffs. The next 16 or 18 games, I agree with you, are critical. They've got a lot of home games. They've got games they can win. I looked at it to get back to 500 by the new year.
Yep.
These next 16 games, they'd have to go 11-5 in their next 16. Looking at what this team has done up to this point, I don't think you can say that that is a realistic goal. But at the same time, I wouldn't be surprised at all if this team turns a page and starts and gets on a hot streak, because they're at home. They're playing against teams they can beat, and they look like they have a blueprint, like you said. So, yeah, I'm still a believer. I mean, I still think this team is going to make the playoffs, but these next 16 games are critical. If by, you know, the new year, things haven't turned around, then we'll know what this team is.
I was a believer. I've been on Jared's side throughout all of this.
Yeah, y'all have been against me. I know.
We've been against you.
Yeah, this is how this podcast always goes.
We're trying to show you the way, man, but you just don't seem to listen.
I'm too young and ignorant, man. I'm still in my 20s. Let me do my dumb people things.
But I will say doubt has started to creep in for me.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
After that Cleveland game, man, because I started to look at the schedule as, okay, where are my automatic wins?
Yeah, well, when they can't beat bad teams, there are no automatic W's.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah.
And that Cleveland game was the one for me that said, okay, I'm starting to view this team differently.
That was the nail in the coffin?
It doesn't take me off of the bandwagon.
Okay. Well, there's still plenty of room on my ship whenever you want to come
over, still,
my friend.
If I've got to pick a side, I'm still sticking to the believer side.
I'm keeping three seats warm for you and Jared and Max.
I appreciate that, man. I don't mind having a
Nate
great seat.
I think Nate has one leg over the rail on his own ship right now. I still don't believe that he has a ship.
You think I only have half a seat over on my ship right now?
Tries to reserve as many seats as possible.
Yeah.
But right now, man, that's the way that I've been looking at this team, is based on those games that I think that they should win versus the ones that they don't. And they've just been head-scratchers to me. And the main thing for me is it comes down to, can these guys catch a break? Can they stay healthy for a little while? And Jared, that's what it is, man. It's, the Zach Collins, Yusuf Nurkic, like, those hurt. But it's all the little ones. Dame missing a couple games here. Whiteside missing a couple of games here. It's all of those. They can't find a flow because of that. Because of finding your true role on this team. They're having to be all over the place. And I think that that's affecting this team more than anything, more than play calling, more than just the way that they're functioning on the court. It's just like, you have to have your identity. You have to know your role. You have to understand who you are. And for a lot of these guys, they're still trying to find it or aren't able to be in that role because of these injuries. So I think that so much of that is going to play in the future success of this team moving forward, because we've seen what happens when one or two guys are out. It just cripples this team, and they turn into a bottom feeder in this league.
One thing I thought about after the Bulls game, and while my butt was halfway back onto the Blazers ship, as you guys like to say, was, should we consider, assuming the Blazers can stay healthy moving forward, should we consider kind of like their first 17 games, like their training camp and preseason type thing? Because
they're playing like it, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it hurts in terms of record, you know, what they posted being 5-12 during those first 17 games. But think about what you spend training camp and preseason doing. Mm-hmm. You try to figure out rotations, where guys can play, what you want each player to do out there on the court. And the Blazers had that, but they had that with a different group than what they have, what they currently are throwing out there, and what we assume they're going to have with moving forward. So if you want to take it with that perspective, that, okay, they went through all these lineup changes due to injury, due to underperformance, whatever it was, and now they finally have this set lineup, like any healthy team would going into the regular season, we're moving forward with these 9 or 10 guys, and let's see how it goes. I think if you wanted to be optimistic as a Blazers fan, you could kind of take that perspective. And then you talked about just having the same 5 guys out there. I don't think it's an accident that on Monday, when Whiteside, Anthony, Hood, Lillard, and McCollum finally all started together, that was the first game this year all 5 starters scored in double figures for the Blazers. I don't think that's a coincidence. So there's my butt half back on the Blazers bandwagon moment. But this hole seems it's not insurmountable. Mm-mm. Because of the fact the other teams in the West that are at the 8th seed right now, Phoenix is 500 right now, Minnesota's the 7th seed, and they're only one game above 500. And do you guys envisioning those teams being much better than 500 by the end of the year?
No.
So maybe 500 is good enough to make the playoffs this year where it wouldn't have been in the past. And if that's the case, I think you Blazers fans could reasonably see this team playing six games above 500 the rest of the way. I'm still not there to the point where I'm ready to say that's going to happen.
I like what you said, Orlando, about can they catch a break? Because up to this point in the season, and the Blazers deserve a lot of the credit for how they've started, but they have also had every single thing go wrong.
Yes.
Everything that could go wrong has gone wrong up to this point. I mean, barring catastrophic injury to Damian Lillard or something.
Sure.
And so maybe it's they're due. Maybe they start to catch some breaks now. Maybe Carmelo is better than people expected. Maybe Hassan Whiteside is able to stay healthy and looks more engaged as he becomes more familiar with this lineup that they have now. I don't know. I mean, that's just speculation, but maybe the tide turns.
Yeah, the one of the greatest, I guess, reasons to still be on the bandwagon and still a believer is the fact that time is still on their side.
Yes.
And this hole is not too deep to get out of.
No. There are still 64 games left in this season.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, three games.
Yep.
I mean, with 2 weeks left in the year, we'd be saying three games isn't insurmountable. We got 4 months left
in the season.
Long way to go.
All right. As I've mentioned before, you can catch these answers on KGW.com. Question number three, it's prediction time, guys. Nate, you want to get us up to speed on where we are record-wise for our season-long predictions?
So last week, as you guys know, I decided to take a gamble. I said, I don't think the Blazers are going to win both games against Cleveland and Chicago. And while I was right on
your theory
point,
was correct.
Yes, I picked the wrong games as to which one they would lose and which one they would win. I thought they would beat Cleveland and lose to Chicago. The opposite happened. So my lead is gone. I'm not the leader anymore. Orlando, my friend, fresh off your rip it victory last week.
Yeah.
You are now the season predictions leader at 11-7. And me and Jared we're still only one game behind you. We're at 10-8 now so far this year.
Very tight race.
It's very close. So here we go, guys. The Blazers, they play four games before we record our next podcast. They've got a home game tonight against the Thunder, who are 6-10 on the season. Then they're at home again Friday against the Bulls, who are 6-12. Tuesday, they make the trip to face the LA Clippers. And then they're back home on Wednesday to take on the Kings, who are 7-9. Which games do the Blazers win? Which games do the Blazers lose?
I'll start. So I think that they're going to build on their momentum from the Bulls game, and I think they're going to – they've got two winnable games at home against the Thunder and the Bulls, so I'm going to pick them to win both of those games.
Yes.
I don't think – I mean, there's the slimmest of chances that they would
they did
beat
play
the Clippers
they played
on the road.
I mean, the Clippers have Paul George back now, but they did play him very tough when they played him down there a couple weeks ago.
And it is a TNT game. Yeah. I mean, there's a possibility, but I'm not going to pick them to beat the Clippers on the road. The Kings are the one that I really had to think about. The Kings deserve some credit. They started out 0-5, and they've won 7 of 11 since. They've had some good wins.
They beat Portland.
And it's a back-to-back for the Blazers. They're coming off that, you know, it's a road-to-home back-to-back, too. So I really thought about the Kings here, but I got to believe in the Blazers. I think that this is going to be a really hard-fought, close game, and I'm going to pick the Blazers to pull it out.
You and I continue to be on the same page with our believer route on this, so it only makes sense that I also double down in the prediction category. So I believe this is a 3-1 week. As you said, two winnable games at home, and if our theory is correct on they can turn the tide, like this is the week we have to see some evidence of that. And a three-game win streak would be a pleasant surprise and something that the Blazers need moving forward. I don't see them beating the Clippers, but crazy things have happened before this season. But that's my take. 3-1 this week.
Those crazy things that have happened, though, have all been negative for the Blazers.
For the
Blazers.
I mean, generally
in the positive.
In the NBA.
Oh, okay. Oh,
not involving the Blazers.
Oh, okay. There we go.
But crazy things have happened in the NBA. Like, who would have thought the Warriors would be at the bottom of the West?
Yeah, whoever picked him to win the title is a real dummy. Man. I don't know who would have done that. So after risking it all last week and losing my biscuits, I'm going to go 3-1 also this week. Go the same exact route.
Oh, you're so weak, dude.
Went.
You're so weak.
Sorry, I had to bring that sauce
on.
In here. Had to do it. Actually, Jared talked about the Sacramento game. The game that I think could actually be a real stumbling block, and maybe I'm just being stubborn with my Bulls.
Chicago?
Is Chicago because, I mean – they were embarrassed on their home court by the Blazers, and they're going to come in on Friday night, you know, just 4 days removed from that loss. They're still going to feel the sting of that when they come in, and I think they're going to want to come in and prove something against Portland. And so I think that game could be a little closer than we anticipate it should be, but in the end, I think they go – I'm going to give them some credit. I'm going to say they go 3-1, lose to the Clippers, beat the other three.
Those poor Bulls didn't just suffer the humiliation of a loss at home. They also suffered the humiliation of having their fans root for the team that was beating them.
And, that's so true.
And it wasn't even the Lakers. Like, you might come across that with a franchise like the Lakers, but it was the Portland Trailblazers. That's probably the first time in Dame's career that's happened.
They were openly cheering for Melo. Yeah. Like, they wanted an encore with the way Carmelo was playing, and that game was so out of reach. They wanted him to beat the snot out of the Bulls.
And he was the one who asked to come out. Yeah. He was winded.
All right, guys. This is a lot of fun here, and we've had a lot of success with this lately, and I've really enjoyed this part of it. I'm glad that Jared has been pushing for this to have other people reach out to us, and we have a ton of email from our listeners.
You've got mail.
3on3blazers@gmail.com.
Good work, Jared. Jared's producing today, so he was the one on. He's the one on the buttons and the bells and whistles.
The button did not work.
He's holding it down, man. Let's try it again.
Let's see.
You've got mail.
There it is. It's a little. It's a little.
Oh, did you hear it?
Yeah.
Really?
It's a little quieter, but
I didn't hear it in my ear at all.
It's a little quieter, but it's there.
So yeah, we've been
need you, Max,
for comments. Yeah, Max. Shout out to Max. No, you're doing a great job, Jared.
But
we've been reaching out to folks, and we've had a lot of success with it, and it's fun to get your perspective, your point of view. It's better than ours sometimes. I'm not ready to go all in. But let's start with Ben Finnegan on Monday, who emailed us and said, with the way Scal is playing, do you think that he would be a potential trade piece by the December 15th mark?
This was a really interesting question because maybe I've had my head in a hole and I've just been amazed they continue to get this production out of Scalabissier, but I hadn't thought of him as a potential trade piece, and we'll have to see where the Blazers are and what they would be interested in adding, but I'd have to imagine that, yeah, he would be a potential trade piece for them. You're not going to let Scalabissier stop you from going and getting a starting four or a three if you're the Blazers. So, yeah, I would say he is.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. I mean, teams are going to be – the Blazers they have these big expiring contracts, but other than them being expiring contracts, it's not a lot of value.
No.
And so the Blazers are going to have to supplement that with good young players or draft picks, and I think you can throw Scalabissier into that good young player role now. I mean, he's averaging 7 points, 5 boards, a block in like 17 minutes per game. He's a good role player. He's a good rotation player. Absolutely. And I was thinking about – he is young – but he's coming up at the end of his rookie contract, but he has a qualifying offer next season for $3.5 million, which means that any team that traded for him would have him on a cheap contract this season, and then they have his restricted free agency rights next season. So that adds even more value. So, yeah, I think that he's a good trade piece if the right trade is out there and a team wants him.
The only thing I disagree with, because all of that is right, is just the Blazers kind of need him.
Yeah.
So
they do, but if
that's
you're,
hard to give away someone at a position where you're slim at.
But if you're wanting to make a move that's going to impact this year's team, I don't see how you're going to have to give up an extra person who is helping you this year. And so they're not going to – I don't think they're going to let that person be Anfernee Simons, and I don't think they want to trade Zach Collins at all either, despite the injury. So you're running out of young talent to deal away with.
Yeah.
And at that point, you just have Nasir Little, Scalabissier, and draft picks at that point.
I think if it's the right trade and the other team asks for Scal, you're going
to
say yes.
Yeah, agreed. All right, so let's go on to Twitter.
Oh, it's your boy.
Matthew at Reverend Romulus. Here we go. He always comes with good questions.
Oh, yes, he does. Matthew brings the
this
heat.
This one's great.
Appreciate you, man. All right. He says, can we already consider Melo's stay with the Blazers more successful than his last two teams?
Yes.
Even while accepting that it will end awkwardly when the team cuts him to make room to trade for Draymond Green and Kevin Love?
He's putting both there. They're going to trade for Draymond and Kevin.
Loaded question there.
The initial answer to that question is yes, we can consider Melo's stay with the Blazers more successful, I think, just because he won them a game already. Right. And I don't know if anyone would have, if any of us thought that that would have happened, especially this early. As far as him being cut at the end of the year or at the end of this non-guaranteed contract, I was pretty certain before they signed him that there was no way he was going to make it through those 2 months and finish the year with the Blazers. Now I'm not so sure now. We'll have to see.
Yeah, I think I would, if I had to bet on it, I think that I'd bet that he sticks with the Blazers the rest of the season. Let's say, I don't think they're trading for Draymond Green and Kevin Love, but let's say they traded for Kevin Love. He's a power forward. I think that he's probably going to start even over Carmelo Anthony. So does Carmelo Anthony moving to the bench work? I mean, I think that's a good question. But what if they move Carmelo Anthony to the three?
Three, yeah.
You know, and he still gets to start? I think there's ways to make it work. If Carmelo Anthony continues to play at the level he's playing at now, there are ways to make it work, even if they make a trade for another star.
That's good stuff, because when this first started, it felt more likely that this would end awkwardly.
Yeah.
With a ton of bad PR from the from fans that wanted to see Melo succeed.
Yeah. It wouldn't be good for both sides in the end, we felt.
Yeah. And so we're somewhat in a different place only after a few games.
After a week.
Yeah, which is super interesting. But this all could blow up and it could end awkwardly.
Yeah.
All right, great question from Matthew, as usual. Gary Powell checking in on Twitter as well. Did the Blazers give Carmelo Anthony 00 to emphasize the amount of defense he'll be playing? Oh, shots fired, man.
That seems like the first time you've read that question there, Arlo. It didn't seem like you were prepared for what was coming at the end of it. Why don't you address it here right off the bat?
I just didn't expect it to go that south,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, that was a... Tell Gary.
Did Nate send this in? Nate, are you Gary Powell?
I am not Gary Powell. I told you.
My goodness. I think we all knew what the Blazers were getting with Carmelo Anthony, right? Yeah.
I think we clearly stated there was going to be no to very little help on defense with this acquisition. So, I mean, it's not like it's a surprise that he's not, you know, giving them great defensive effort. Well, he's giving them effort, but
right.
Just in terms of playing good defense, it's not a surprise that that's not happening. As far as the 00 goes, they didn't. 7 was reportedly unavailable because that was Brandon Roy's number, mm-hmm. and Carmelo wore 7. Mm-hmm. And I told Jared, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure. Like,
I think you're right.
On Instagram, yeah. Carmelo's been doing like a 007 thing, mm-hmm. which I think is where the birth of the 00 comes from.
Which is pretty cool, I have to say. Listen, Carmelo's defense is not good. We know that. But it could be worse.
I actually
looked up his numbers. When he's been on the court, their defensive rating is 110.4. As a team overall, it's 110.6. So theoretically, technically, he's making them better defensively.
Oh, Jared, turning it around on its head.
Also, small sample size. But that starting lineup right now, Dame, CJ Hood, Melo, and Whiteside, 100 defensive rating.
All right.
Against the Bulls. So
hold on to these receipts,
yes.
Gary Powell. Check back with us in a couple of weeks, and let's see where we stand with that question. But I love it. Shots fired, man. All right. Let's move on to Georgie. J-O-R-J.
George, I think.
George?
Let's go with George.
All right, George. Chances we sign Jamal Crawford. I even saw C.J. McCollum was out there, you know, pushing for someone to sign this man.
Zero, just because the Blazers, they don't need guard help. In fact, if Anfernee Simons progresses this year, they may find themselves in a bit of a guard quandary moving forward. Mm-hmm. So, no on Jamal Crawford.
Yeah, I would stunt Anfernee Simons' development, so yeah. I don't see a role for him here.
All right, Greg, how long do you think the Carmelo honeymoon will last? Are we talking weeks, months?
Well, we're 1 week into it, and
so far so good.
And after one game, we're all very pleased and happy right now. It's like the beginning of a bumpy marriage. Like, we had a really good first week. Let's see how this rolls moving forward. Oh, how long is the honeymoon gonna last?
I mean, unless his play just completely falls off a cliff,
they need him.
He's a good dude to root for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like, I mean, you saw that thing with his wife holding up the FaceTime phone with his son. His 12-year-old son. I mean, it's really hard not to root for this guy, especially since he was out of the league for a year. Mm-hmm. And the way you see it now, it's like, why wasn't he in the league?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Carmelo can still play. Mm-hmm. I mean, it makes no sense. So he's really easy to root for. And now he's the Blazers underdog to root for. So, like, he's the kind of player that Blazers fans generally get behind. I mean, I don't know.
I'm going to say the honeymoon itself, because the honeymoon isn't the entire marriage.
True.
I'm going to say the honeymoon lasts another week or two, just because he's finally home this week. So that's what the second week is going to be about, getting to see him play for the Blazers in the Moda. So I'll give it another 2 weeks. And then at that point, if the team is still struggling, I think the honeymoon period will be over.
Yeah, I'll take a month.
Okay.
I'll go with a month on this as well. But as you mentioned, like, if there's any sign of him playing well, or, you know, just a good game here or there, the fan base here loves him.
Yeah.
Like, this has been really fun to watch this quickly. It reminds me of how people really embraced Ennis last year.
Yeah.
You know, like, Carmelo's turning into that, but you're talking about a Hall of Famer,
yeah,
a future Hall of Famer here, and carries that star power that's probably arguably greater than Damian Lillard's.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely brought renewed interest, mm-hmm, into the Portland Trail Blazers. There's no doubt.
Yeah, and at 6-12, the power of him playing well against the Chicago Bulls.
I mean,
right.
I mean, think,
like, we forgot about it.
Think
for the
about
night.
If the Blazers were 6-12 in any other year, no one nationally would, mm-mm, be talking about the Blazers.
No.
But people still kind of are nationally because of the fact that Carmelo Anthony's on the team, and now he has one really jaw-dropping performance under his belt.
Carmelo Anthony has always been one of the most popular players in the NBA overall. And I never really understood it before. It was always like, he's kind of a ball hog. He doesn't play good defense. But now, and again, it's been four games, but watching him play for the team that you care about, I can understand why so many fans love him.
Why Knicks fans just love him.
Yeah, he's fun to watch play, and he's a fun, engaging personality. I mean, so I don't know. Unless everything goes wrong, I don't see the honeymoon ending. I think that Blazers fans are going to be happy with him going forward.
So you're saying I should go get a Melo jersey? Is that what we're hearing?
Are you saying that you already ordered a Melo jersey?
Wouldn't you get a Carmelo Anthony jersey just to have a Blazers Melo jersey?
Yeah. I mean, maybe I'll have 007 on the back instead of just the 00. There you go.
Yeah, man. I'm still waiting for the debut of your Anthony Simons jersey.
That's coming. I want it to be a full house when we do that.
That's fair. So we've got a couple more comments to get to. Back to our Gmail account here. We got a couple more emails.
These are not questions. These are
comments that came into the inbox, but we still feel like, you know, there are other fans who relate
to.
We're
going to
give you the platform is what we're saying.
Let's do it.
Oh, man. This is where the wheels come off. Thanks for sticking with us. 46 minutes into the pod. You will be rewarded.
There's only a couple left here.
TBA Nix wrote this on Saturday, correct?
Yes. Correct.
TBA Nix says, we are a gullible fan base. Carmelo is a Band-Aid and not a very good one. Notice how silent Damian is when the team is losing? Christmas is a month away, and Blazers need to start tanking and rebuilding fast. Nurk is better for next year, and Zach also.
Man, you can feel this email had to have been sent
after
the Cleveland
game.
Yeah,
I feel
Saturday.
The pain in this email as well.
And at that time, it's a totally it's a fine take at that time of night. Like, what were we all thinking on Saturday night?
Oh, yeah,
people, where were your thoughts on Saturday night?
Well,
I mean, maybe not in the full tank mode.
I saw a lot of this stuff on Blazers Twitter after that Cleveland game. This is very,
It was lottery. The word lottery was starting to come up.
Yep.
Yeah.
See, for me, I didn't have to think about it as much. It was like icing on the cake for such a bad local sports day because the Beavers lost, the Ducks lost. Like, it was just a really bad sports day for Oregon sports in general. So they kind of got a pass for me until the next day when I realized just how bad it was.
Yeah.
All right. One last listener comment.
This one was sent back a couple weeks ago.
I would say, is this a typo on the sheet? But that's the real date?
No, that is when we first put the email together, and a few weeks ago we said, hey, send in your questions. This was the first one that came in, and it wasn't a question, so I didn't put it down on the list. But I think that we decided that if you take the time to send in a comment and your thoughts about the Blazers, we're going to give you the platform here, like Orlando said.
Well, TBA Knicks set the tone here.
Yeah.
So can Bill Looney.
Speaking of Knicks, that's part of this question. Yes. So go in.
Bill Looney.
On November 8th, sent this email. Thank you, Bill.
With a new owner of the team in the near future, with Lillard's shooting attempts and percentage plus low assist totals a liability, trade Lillard to Knicks along with Zach Collins for 3 first-round picks, forward Julius Randle, Kevin Knox, and a point guard. When Nurkic is back, watch how much they improve with team basketball. No championship will ever come with the $50 million a year Lillard.
There's a lot to unpack with that one. So first off, they're not trading Damian Lillard, in this hypothetical. If the Blazers don't win another game the rest of the year, they're not trading Damian Lillard after this season.
I think Bill here is part of the very, 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 very small minority of Blazers fans that do not like Damian Lillard. Yeah. That's what I take from this comment.
And people have argued that he doesn't help in terms of team flow, but they've managed to make the Western Conference Finals last year. Now, when Nurkic is back, watch at how they improve with team basketball. I mean, I don't know why you have to trade Lillard and then have Nurkic come back for team basketball to work. We saw it work last year with those two. And when Nurkic comes back, if he is able to be anything like we saw last year, that will be a huge lift for the Portland Trail Blazers. Now the last one, no championship will ever come with $50 million a year Lillard. Now that one, I think, has a little bit of staying power because that is a lot to put into one player. And I'm not saying the Blazers shouldn't have paid him that. Lillard deserves every penny he should make, and the Blazers pay him every penny he should make. But the rule of being able to pay players more with the team they're currently on and came up with seems to have backfired a little bit on franchises because in terms of salary cap, it does put you in more of a bind to build the team around that star player. So there may be something to that. It may be tough to build a championship contender around a guy making $50 million a year, but the Blazers had no choice. This was a no-brainer. Go and do it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that rather than trade Damian Lillard where he can go play his home games at Madison Square Garden, I'd rather them continue to build around Damian Lillard. He's a bona fide superstar, one of the top 10 players in the NBA. So go get another star. You've got a window right now in the next 2 years when you can make some moves to bring in one more star and see what this team can do.
What about you, Orlando? Are you shipping Dame?
Oh, come on now, man.
You got to talk to him later tonight. You're not going to go with that take?
No, man. I'm not even going there, man. it's fun, you know, like $50 million a year is going to be a lot for this team, but like right now that's a non-factor.
It is, and they're not to
like,
that
this
point
is not
yet.
An
that's
issue
at
right
the
now.
End of Dame's contract. They're not to that $50 million.
Right.
Point
and
yet.
Would Bill feel the same way if he was making 35 a year? Like I feel like he would be locked into the no championship idea regardless.
That's a good point.
And Damian Lillard, as you mentioned, is a bona fide star and right now the best point guard in the NBA.
Yeah.
Because Steph Curry's out. You can make that argument when he comes back.
What about Doncic, man?
Yeah, he's a stud too.
But yeah, that's a good point.
But at this point in time, Damian Lillard is on the throne.
Yes.
All right, guys. We appreciate everybody who let us know how they're feeling. Give us some questions. This is good stuff, man. I really enjoyed this part of it. Sorry we couldn't give you the rip it that you so deserve. During the holiday spirit, as we get into Thanksgiving.
We spoke nice about Max earlier, but you should blame Max. If you're upset about that, hit him up on Twitter. At MaxNBar is where you can find him on Twitter.
Speaking of Thanksgiving, guys, what is your favorite Thanksgiving food, and what is your least favorite Thanksgiving food that you won't even touch?
My favorite is mashed potatoes. And some people
with gravy?
I've grown to put gravy on it, but I still prefer it without gravy.
Okay.
But now I'm not near as picky about it as I used to be. Some people will come at me, you can have mashed potatoes. And I don't care. No. I don't care if I have any time of year. Thanksgiving mashed potatoes are different than every other day of the year mashed potatoes. They're different.
Man.
So give me some mashed potatoes. And I don't know, do you guys do like cranberries on Thanksgiving or anything? Yeah, I have
in the past.
I don't touch cranberries. No way.
Yeah, that's the easy part of this question.
Yeah, what are you not
I'm throwing
touching?
Out cranberries. Man.
Cranberries are gone?
Yeah, I don't mess with
that.
What
about green bean casserole?
I'll get down with
I
that.
I like green bean casserole. That's good stuff.
That would be my second one to go.
Oh.
Ship it on your guys' Blazers bandwagon over there. Put all the potatoes next to me on my ship.
What about your favorite,
Orlando? As far as the favorite, if mashed potatoes are definitely part of the star, like the star of the show for me.
Yeah.
But I discount it a little bit because I will have mashed potatoes throughout the year.
Mm.
So for me, I'm going stuffing. I love stuffing.
Stuffing is so good.
Yeah, like I could take stuffing over turkey.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go stuffing as the first part of your question there. How about you, man?
So I think cranberries are fine. I can take them or leave them. I actually like after Thanksgiving, like a cranberry and turkey sandwich is good.
Mm.
But
leftovers we're talking.
Yeah. Yeah.
Getting into a whole new ball game.
Oh, yeah.
But my least favorite holiday food is sweet yams.
Oh.
Yeah, there's a texture problem there for me.
I do not like yams at all, so I won't eat those.
Luckily, I have not been exposed to those in my family's
sweet potatoes or yams. There was one time my aunt made yams, and she made them with, like, butter and salt and pepper, and so they were more savory than sweet, and they were actually pretty good. But, like, candied yams, ugh, no.
Yeah.
Just keep those away from me.
One thing the listeners should know about Jared is Jared cooks a little bit.
I do.
What was it? Not yesterday. It was Tuesday. So
it was yesterday.
It's Wednesday today. Oh, man.
Normally
my days are all mixed.
Normally we tape on Thursday.
It is Wednesday today. So yesterday we have a digital team meeting every week on the KGW digital team. And yesterday Jared made some soup for the entire team. So we all got lunch. Thanks to Jared. And what was the soup called?
It was Zuppa Toscana, if you've ever had it at Olive Garden.
Their
sausage and potato and kale soup. Mm. Yeah,
it was really good. Yeah, it was baller.
So this is
it was like Anthony Simon's status level right there.
My favorite Thanksgiving food is definitely, and it's because I really only have it at Thanksgiving and Christmas, and it helped me get through a tough Blazers loss on Christmas last year. It's pie.
Yeah.
Give me pie, man.
Do you care what
I
type
love
of pie?
I like pumpkin. My favorite pie, though, is cherry. Cherry pie with vanilla ice cream.
Do you cherry pie on Thanksgiving?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Cherry, apple, and pumpkin.
Well, we have to remember that during a skid.
Yeah.
Blazers run.
Next time they lose to Cleveland, if it's the game before the podcast, we bring cherry pie for Jared to eat while we're doing the podcast.
Because he's still a Blazers believer.
He is.
There you go.
Maybe could lose to Cleveland 5 more times and he would still be a Blazers believer.
I don't know about that.
A fun week. Guys, I hope you guys have a happy Thanksgiving. Thank you guys for joining us. And we will be back better than ever. Where can people find you guys on Twitter?
At @nhands_KGW.
You can find me at Jared Cowley.
And I'm at Orlando KGW. Make sure to pick up the pod, y'all. Give us a rating. 5 stars, preferably. Make sure to give us a review. We want all of it. Give it all to us. You guys can stream the podcast wherever podcasts are found. Spotify, Google Play, you name it. We are there. We've got you. And thank you to everyone who has jumped on board this year. It's been a lot of fun, guys. We'll run it back next week. See ya.